As always, thanks for listening in today to our Friday broadcast of Abiding in the Word with Dave Love, Senior Pastor of Calvary Castle Rock. Today we will be continuing our study in Exodus, so let's join Pastor Dave now.
Soon your trials will be over.
And it says here in verse 9, Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel. Say to them, When you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall appoint cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person accidentally may flee there. They shall be cities of refuge for you from the avenger. Underline that, avenger. That's going to come up time and time again in God's word. It's in reference to coming back to here. The avenger is going to be people of the victim's family, okay, that are going to want to avenge the death of their family member that's been killed. But this guy did it accidentally. That manslayer may not die till he stands before the congregation in judgment. So again, we have him standing there before the congregation of judgment. It's a place for the manslayer to go until all the facts are sorted out. The congregation of judgment means there will be judges in these cities that are going to determine what really happened. And so the avenger of blood will have to wait until the judges decide, was this accidental? Was it not accidental? Let's talk to the witnesses who saw this happen. You know, was there a motive behind it? You know, all those kind of things is what they will do. And so the cities of refuge was a place to go until all the facts have been sorted out. All right. So then he goes on and says in verse 13, And of the cities which you give, you shall have six cities of refuge. And you shall appoint these cities on the side of Jordan, and three cities you shall appoint in the land of Canaan, which will be cities of refuge. And these six cities shall be for refuge for the children of Israel, for the stranger, for the sojourner among them, that anyone who kills a person accidentally may flee there. So it's not just for the citizens of Israel. It's for anybody, foreigner, stranger, that's going through the land and they accidentally kill someone. They can also go to the cities of refuge. So it's the same laws for them as for the citizens themselves. Okay. And then it says in verse 16, But if he strikes him with an iron implement so that he dies, he's a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. It was an accident. Well, what'd you kill him with? A sword? All right, well, see how that flies. And if he strikes him with a stone in the hand by which one could die, and if he does die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. Or if he strikes him with a wooden hand weapon by which one could die, and he does die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall surely be put to death. Okay? So the avenger of blood himself shall put the murderer to death. When he meets him, he shall put him to death. If he pushes him out of hatred, or while lying in wait, hurls something at him so that he dies, or in enmity he strikes him with his hand so that he dies, the one who struck him shall surely be put to death. He is a murderer. The avenger of blood shall be put the murderer to death when he meets him. So if what's the motive? You know, I hate that guy. I've always hated that guy. You know, and so you have that malice in your heart. And so then, and everybody knows about that, all right? And then all of a sudden you accidentally kill them? There's motive there. Everybody has known for a long time how much you hated this guy, okay? And so again, the judges in the cities will be able to determine. They're going to sort out all the facts. Okay, we have motive. We've known that you've hated him for a long time. We have witnesses. There's three of them. They saw you do this. They saw and heard you days before saying, I'm going to kill you, whatever it might be. They gather all the facts, and you've now, this person, no, but it was an accident. It's like, no, you murdered him. And so they make that determination there. They get to do that. And so he goes on, and it says, verse 24, Then the congregation shall judge between the manslayer and the avenger of blood according to these judgments. So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall return him to the city of refuge where he fled, and he shall remain there until the death of the high priest, who is anointed with the holy oil. So if they determine that again he wasn't seeking him harm, that he wasn't didn't have malice in his heart, then he needs to remain there in the city until the high priest dies. Okay? Now this is fascinating to me. It's when the high priest died, then you're free to go. Okay? Who is our high priest? Jesus. It's interesting to me that by his death, we are also set free from the bondage of sin. You know? And so I do believe that there is a shadowing there of the high priest that also speaks of in the day that the high priest dies, speaking of the ultimate high priest, Jesus, when he dies, that's going to set us free from the bondage of all sin. So, but if the manslayer at any time goes outside the limits of the city refuge where he fled, and the avenger blood finds him outside the limits of a city of refuge, and the avenger blood kills a manslayer, he shall not be guilty of blood. So before they even find out whether he's guilty or not, and the guy goes out, and it isn't under the protection of the city, if the manslayer is found by that family, well, he has no one to blame but himself, is what's being said here. Because he should have remained in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, a manslayer may return to the land of his possession. And these things shall be a statue of judgment to you throughout your generations and all your dwelling. And whoever kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the testimony of witnesses. Plural. But one witness is not sufficient testimony against a person for the death penalty. Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of the murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. You shall take no ransom from him who's fled to this city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the land before the death of the priest. So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land, and no atonement can be made for the land, for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. Therefore, do not defile the land which you inhabit, in the midst of which I dwell. For I, the Lord, dwell among the children of Israel. So this is another reason why you have capital punishment. You remove the murderer from your land. Because if you don't, your land is defiled. It's defiled by that innocent blood. Okay? And you're not supposed to take a ransom for the life of the murderer. That means rich people don't get off. Okay? I'm sorry, okay, here's $100,000. Okay, then we aren't going to convict you and we're not going to kill you for the murder. No, that's not right. Okay? And so, it is, you take the life of the one who murdered. That is what you do. And understand, I find this absolutely interesting as well. Deuteronomy 17:6, just like it says in verse 30 here, whoever deserving of death shall be put to death on the testimony of two or three witnesses. Shall not be put to death on the testimony of one witness. Why? Because it's his word against yours. It's her word against yours. And he or she might not be a really nice person. And guess what? They're trying to get you into trouble. So there needs to be two or three witnesses in order for something to be established. It can't just be one person that says you did it. Okay? Now, if you ask me, this is, so you're talking about a perfect God given an imperfect law because it's an imperfect world. Okay? So, God in principle is willing for some murderers to go free in order to avoid the death penalty on someone who is innocent. Okay? So it's the best law you can give at this point for fallen humanity. Okay? And so again, man, even if it means that murderer goes free because we don't have more than one witness, you know. today, I kind of wonder if we do have more than one witness, if DNA is not a witness. I think we can make a case for that. I wasn't there, but roll the video. I think we know who he is. You know, I do think that that is also a witness, okay? So I think a couple of these things can help in being one of those witnesses, all right? I did it, and I'm glad I did it. And he gives you the exact thing that happened, and everything measures up. He's testimony against himself. So there are some things that we have today that we didn't have back then, but it shows me that God is very concerned, okay, about convicting someone who's innocent, okay? So I'm all for reforming the death penalty so innocent people aren't, you know, killed for something they didn't do. But I'm absolutely against removing the death penalty, okay? I'll reform it. I'll be there in the meetings with you, whatever it takes to reform. Yeah, I want to make sure that we do not execute anybody innocent. But when you know without a shadow of a doubt, then life in prison isn't it. It is to remove them from the face of the earth, and it is the death penalty is what should happen there. Now again, the elders of the city are the ones who determine the guilt. I want you to go over here to Deuteronomy chapter 19. Starting in verse 11 here, it says, "But if anyone hates his neighbor, lies in wait for him, rises against him and seeks him mortally, strikes him mortally, so that he dies and he flees to one of these cities." So again, we're talking about somebody premeditated murder. They are a murderer, okay? "Then the elders of his city shall send and bring him from there and deliver him over to the hand of the avenger of blood." There's that avenger of blood again, okay? "That he may," what? "Die." Notice what it says there. "Your eye shall not pity, but you shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from Israel, that it may go well with you." So it's the elders of the city that determine guilt. Once they determine that he is definitely a murderer, then guess what? He should be removed from this earth. And his life should be taken. And notice what it says in verse 13. "Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from the land." Remember, we just read about it pollutes the land. And so when we don't kill murderers, our land is polluted. "You shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from Israel, that it may go well with you." Notice what it says here. "Your eye shall not pity him." Why does it say that? Why does it say that? "Your eye shall not pity him." Okay, why didn't it say your ears should not pity him? Why didn't it say your nose should not pity him? Why didn't it say that your, you know, lower lip should not pity him? It says your eye. Why? Because what you see affects how you feel. That's why. Speaks of emotions. Speaks of feeling there. And God is saying, I don't want your feelings or your emotions to overrule your obedience to me. That's what he's saying right there. And you need to put away the guilt of innocent blood. Why? So it will go well with you. God is warning us not to allow what we can see about the murderer, the condemned murderer. Oh, he seems so repentant. He's so sorry for what he did. That it blinds us to the horror of the victims themselves and their families. All of a sudden, we forget about what he or she did. And because of that, we shouldn't take his life. And because of that, you're not obeying God. You're not obeying God. Dennis Prager, he wrote a commentary in the first five books of the Bible. It's called The Rational Bible. And so his commentary here on this verse, verse 13 of chapter 19 of Deuteronomy, he says this: "Knowing the power of the eye, many opponents of capital punishment have suggested they televise executions of murderers. They correctly assume that seeing a person put to death would likely engender sympathy for that individual and generate increased opposition to the death penalty," and it certainly would. Certainly would. "To them, I have proposed a deal." He says, "We will televise executions if right before doing so, we show the public, as realistic as possible, a reenactment of what the murderer did. And then we broadcast interviews with the members of the murdered individual's family and the horror they've gone through." Well, that seems fair. And then you're able to see that. He goes on to say in a debate on American television with the leader of an anti-capital punishment vigil being held in front of a prison where the murderer was about to be executed. I asked the activist if he and his supporters had ever held a vigil in support of a murderer's victim's family. I received no response. Because you don't do that. Although that's exactly where the vigil should be held. That we should remember the family, not the murderer. When someone says, by executing the murderer, you're just adding to the death count, by just adding another death, that's like saying, if you give a monetary fine to a thief for stealing money, you're adding to the money stolen. See how stupid that is? That's why it's very stupid to be able to say you're adding to the death toll. Okay, but what if someone is lying? What if someone's a false witness? I find it interesting that God speaks about that. And this is one of the problems with our justice system, is that what I'm about to read you is not in our justice system. And if it was, it would help out with a lot of issues that we have when it comes to someone falsely accusing someone else. And yet here we have in verse 15, whose grandkid is that? Oh, wait, that's mine. Hey, Henry, chill, man. Verse 15, it says, one witness shall not rise against a man concerning an inquiry or any sin that he commits. Not one. They can't have one. It's got to be more than one. By the mouth of two, three witnesses, the matter shall be established. So God is putting in their safeguards. Before you kill someone for murder, let's have a couple safeguards. Let's make sure, for one, there's multiple witnesses. Let's make sure, for two, that we have judges that sort out all the facts, okay? And let's make sure we have no false witnesses right here. If a false witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing. You know what's interesting about this? The word false here for false witness is the Hebrew word chamas. So this is not a false witness that is just making a mistake. This is a false witness that is chamas, violent, cruel, wrong. That's what that word means. It's not the same word that's used in the ninth commandment. You shall not bear false witness. That's a different word for false there. But here, this false witness is malicious. He has malicious intent. He wants something violent to happen to the other person. And he's cruel in what he is doing. That false witness is what's being spoken of here. If a false witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who serve in those days. And the judges shall make a careful inquiry. And indeed, if the witness is a false witness, a Hamas witness, who has testified falsely, he's wrong, against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So if you're being a witness, so that guy gets the death penalty, and then you're found out to be Hamas, that false, malicious witness, to bring him harm, guess what? You die. Thank you. Vote for me. I'm running for... No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So again, I just want you to understand, wouldn't that be great that someone falsely accuses you of something? It could be a neighborhood spat or whatever, so the HOA will fine you or whatever, and then they find out that you're a false witness, now you get fined. How awesome would that be? I think that'd be great. And you know what that will do? And the reason I know this will happen, God's word says it so right here. It says right here, and so you shall put away the evil from among you, and those who remain shall hear and fear. And hereafter they shall not again commit such evil among you. It's a deterrent against false witnesses. That's what it will do. You know, we see all sorts of things in the court system, on the federal level, on the civil level, and you get up there, and what does the defense attorney usually try to do? Tries to discredit the witness. And sometimes the witness is so full of malice, yeah, they should be discredited, and they shouldn't be allowed to be a witness. Well, you were heard saying that you hate this woman. You were heard saying that you would do anything to, you know, harm this woman. And here you are testifying against this woman? Yeah, I don't think we should receive anything. But what I'm saying is true. It doesn't matter. Too much malice in your heart? We cannot believe you. And if you cannot believe the witness, then guess what? You shouldn't listen to anything that he or she has to say. And so, again, but if they were convicted, what would happen to them? Well, this would happen to them. That should happen to that false witness. You're a false witness. You have malice against that person. And it's obvious. You know, you shouldn't be able to testify. And that would take care of a lot of problems that we have. Okay, a lot of problems that we have. Yes, some guilty people might go free. But there's safety safeguards there for what reason? It's the reason so someone innocent would not be convicted. That was a little weird, wasn't it? You're looking at, what's he bringing a trash can over here for? Chad, you okay? You feeling sick? Are you going to need to hurl in that? Is that why? Is it water dripping? Is that what it is? Okay. All right. Just making sure. Just so y'all understood what that was about. So again, you have this Hamas witness here. So we have all these safeguards, multiple witnesses, penalties against false witnesses, judges to discern the truth. No vigilante justice. The Avengers stay outside the city there. Let the judges take care of it. No vigilante justice. Objections have been stated before about the death penalty, saying, well, the system's not fair. More poor minorities die than rich folk. All right. I agree with that. That shouldn't be the case. I say we reform capital punishment. We don't remove it. Secondly, what I won't let you get away with, the poor guy. Oh, I feel so sorry for the poor guy that got killed from capital punishment. Why? Well, because the other nine, you know, rich guys didn't die by the death penalty. Okay, so the injustice is with the nine. It's not with the one. The poor guy died because he murdered someone. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. If you murder someone, you should die. So the right thing happened to the poor guy. The wrong thing has happened to the other nine guys. Okay? But to then take away the death penalty, when on the one instance it actually worked and did the right thing, the other nine is where the injustice is, not with the guy who died. Do you get that? It's so frustrating to me when I have people, well, the system's unfair. It's like, hold on. Who's it unfair to? The poor murderer? It's unfair to the poor murderer? Is that what you're saying? Yes, that is what you're saying. That's dumb. Don't do that. It's unfair to the nine who have money that tie up the system with one appeal after another. That's where it's wrong. Let's reform that. But don't take away the death penalty. Dave, this is all Old Testament stuff. Jesus changed all this at the Sermon on the Mount. Really? Let's go.
This Friday edition of Abiding in the Word with Pastor Dave Love has come to a close. Don't miss Monday as we continue our study through Exodus. If you're in Castle Rock or the surrounding area, we'd love to have you visit. You'll find us right near the actual Castle Rock on the corner of 5th and Woodlands. Our weekend services are Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at a new time of 8:30 a.m. as well as 11 a.m. High schoolers will meet during the 8:30 service and junior high students during the 11 a.m. service. Child care is available during all our weekend services. We also have a midweek study on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. At the same time, our kids ministry runs Awana. And for young adults, our Arise ministry meets every Friday night at 6:30, right here at the church. For more information about us or this radio ministry, please visit our website at calvarycr.com or download our free mobile app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also call the church office at 303-663-2514. We appreciate you spending time with us today. Until our next time together, we encourage you to always be abiding in the Word of God.